Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Saturday, February 6th, 2021. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. If you're really into this thing, if this podcast entertains you in any form or fashion, please go to Apple Podcasts. Give it a 5-star review. Let everybody know why you like it, because it leads me closer and closer to world domination and the fact that a brown-skinned singer or actress will know who I am, think that I'm a little bit talented, maybe not as talented as them, but just talented enough and handsome enough to let me father a child with them and have a nice life with them. And, you know, maybe, you know, she'd let me go on tour with her or something, and I could open for her or something like that. This is episode 485. I have two super special return guests. You know them. You love them very much. Brandon Collins and Justin Brown from the Medium Popcorn Podcast. We had a super great time. What? We had a great time talking about movies. Two movies in particular. Promising Young Woman and Pieces of a Woman. Two movies about white women going through things. And you know that I love that. So I'm going to share that conversation that I had with them with you in a bit. Right now, I just want to talk to you for a few moments. Can I do that? Can I do that on my own fucking podcast? Can I? I think I'm going to do that. Recording this early on Saturday, putting it out early. Why not? It's Super Bowl weekend, the games tomorrow. Let's go, Patrick Mahomes. You know where I stand on that. You know that this means a lot to me, because every time a black quarterback does something, it just makes me feel good. When they do something good, it makes me feel good. Because I had to hear Rodney Harrison. I don't think I heard him, but they made I clicked on a YouTube clip about Max Kellerman and Stephen A. Smith responding to Rodney Harrison saying that Cam Newton can't play football anymore and that he's just not good when he played with the Patriots this past season. You know, the guy was banged up. He's a former MVP. He was banged up his whole career. Didn't really have that much protection. He gave his body to the game that he grew up playing. He had a mediocre team with no weapons or anything. People got COVID. He got COVID and still played, and they won 7 games, I believe. I'm not going to look it up, but he won enough. But maybe it didn't work with him this past season with the Patriots. But by gum, I still think he can play football. But Matthew Stafford, who has a losing record and hasn't won a playoff game in his over a decade career, is the toast of the town. He's the belle of the ball. But Rodney Harrison has not weighed in on that. So, yeah, Patrick Mahomes needs to win. Does he even know who I am? Do any of the players playing on Sunday know who I am? No, they don't. But it would mean a lot to me if Patrick Mahomes won. Will I lose any sleep? Probably not. But will I feel happy? Yes. Yeah, I will. So let's go, Chiefs. Let's go. Let's do it. What else? Happy Black History Month. We're 6 days in, almost a week in. What have you done this week? What have you done to celebrate? Did you help a black person? Did you subscribe to Patreon, his Patreon? I almost had a subscriber. I had somebody subscribe to Patreon, and I was like, oh shit, nice, awesome. And before I could thank them, they withdrew. So I don't know. But hey, you know, my Patreon's there. I just uploaded two things. I uploaded an episode, and I uploaded a picture of an omelet that didn't break in half. So that's there. That's the kind of premium content that you get on the Mundane Festival Podcast. So there's that. There might be more videos. I can't promise you anything, but there might be more videos to come. It was pretty easy to upload that thing. So Maybe you get more front-facing videos from me. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Maybe me cooking stuff. Or even if the next time that I make an omelet, when it fails. Omelet fails. How about that? What else? So Black History Month's been good. Snowed out the past few days. Earlier in this last, about a week ago, we got snow on Sunday. I didn't leave my place until Wednesday. Dug my car out, all that good stuff. Been auditioning, working on my craft as an artist while doing TPS reports. I've been doing that. What else? What have you guys done? Have you watched a black movie? And then did you watch a black movie that came out yesterday or recently? And did you shit on it and write an article? Did you try to shit on the black movie to appease white people? I don't know. I didn't do that, but a lot of people did. But I personally liked Malcolm and Marie. I thought it was good. I enjoyed it. I got something out of it. I was entertained. And I would like to think that a superstar in the making like Zendaya and John David Washington, I think that, you know, they were producers on the film. And I don't think that I think that they had some say in what their characters did and said. I think it was a solid movie that I enjoyed with an adult beverage last night. I'm not saying you're wrong if you didn't like it. You can like what you like, and that's fine. But I thought the movie was okay, and I didn't need to try to tell my audience how smart I was by trying to compare it to Edward Albee, which was Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. I didn't think that I didn't feel the need to let people know how smart I was, because I could reference a play from 1962 that really had very little to do with that play. You know, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf had four characters, and Malcolm and Marie had two. I'll give you that it's the aftermath of a big event, but that's about all I'll give you. And I would even go further to say that Malcolm and Marie is a little more like Black Bear than Reese, which came out last year, a little more like the Aubrey Plaza movie, but a little more grounded in reality than Black Bear. That's what I'll say about that. I mean, you could subscribe to my Patreon and I could drop knowledge. I could drop knowledge like that off the dome. You know, I could do that. I'm pretty smart. I don't know what it is. You know, I think this podcast is really good. I think it's actually very good. I'm going to get in my bag a little bit. I'm going to get in my righteous prick J.L. Covan bag. This podcast is pretty good. Now, I don't know what you think about me. You could think a lot of things, but I'm good at this shit. And I'll even go further to say that this is a good podcast. And I don't know what people think. I don't know what it is. Is it because that I was in an Oscar nominated film? I'm low key a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe a little bit. I mean, even though I was in a show that had two or three seasons and it's canceled, and I don't know that they're going to go any further with that show or that character. But I think maybe, do you think I have that I'm rich? Because I'm not. You could subscribe to this Patreon. I'm not going to beg you. I could just say you could subscribe to it. There's hours and hours of bonus content. I just told you, I posted a 22-second video of an omelet that I made. All right, this is enough. I'm just angry about this Malcolm and Marie bullshit. I don't know why I'm angry. I don't know why I'm so angry about it. It just really made me mad this weekend, and it's nothing that I have no control over whatsoever. But if you're into the show, subscribe to the Patreon. All right. I want to get to Brandon and Justin. I wanted to do this for a while. And I think now that I was able to get Zoom and all this stuff. I wanted to be a little more expansive and just have like these conversations with people. This is probably the best episode of the year so far. We're like 6 weeks into the year, I would say. Yeah. 6 weeks into the year, and I think this is one of the best fucking episodes of this podcast. Because Brandon and Justin are good at what they do, and I'm good at what I do. No, but there's just the conversations that sparked from this, the amount of stuff that was shared. And you think you think on the surface these are just three guys talking about a couple of movies with white women in it. And that's what it is on the surface. But it got deeper than I expected. There's a lot of times on this podcast, you know, you turn the mics on and you think we're just going to talk about these movies and we're going to do X, Y, and Z. And it's happened quite a few times on this show where it's just like, oh, this is wow. This is gold. This is really people opening up and sharing their stories. And it's one of the reasons why I love doing this and why I love having these conversations. But I initially was just like, hey, guys, you know, let's talk about Promising Young Woman and Pieces of a Woman and just see what happens. And those guys were game. And we just had really a really good time. And this is a bit of a long one. I'm trying to think of some things that I wanted to. So there's a part of the review where I mention a podcast. I mention a YouTube channel, and I just kind of dismissively said, "Yeah, these two gay guys have a movie review show." I didn't want whatever I said. It was dismissive. And I want to be more specific with it. There's a YouTube channel called Fish Jelly Film Reviews that I'm subscribed to. And in the moment, I couldn't think of that. But these two guys, Nick and Joseph, who do these movie reviews, and they're actually really good. And so Fish Jelly Film Reviews with Nick and Joseph. And they say that one of the descriptions says gay homosexuals. Nick and Joseph spoil X, you know, whatever movie it is. So check them out if you're into that. I wanted to shout them out. And then there's the issue of like Carrie Mulligan in Promising Young Woman. Her character's supposed to be 30. I know there's been controversy. I'm making air quotes. Or she definitely spoke out on a film critic. I think I'm not sure what paper he was from. But he was saying something like, you know, she's too old to be playing somebody that age or whatever. She's only 35. I think Carrie Mulligan is a bad one. I think she's hot and really and also very talented. But I think, you know, I just want to make that clear that she's dope as fuck. I've been liking her since In Education. And she's also really good in this show called Collateral. That I think was like a BBC show, and Netflix picked it up too and ran it. It was a mini series that she played this great. She's great, and she played a detective in that. But I think that's it. I really, like I said, I think this one was a really good one. If you have not seen these movies, we do spoil both of them. So if you're into that, you'd have no problem with listening to the, if you listen to Medium Popcorn, we kind of do it in that format. And I think that's pretty much it. I think that's all that I want to say, to you guys. So without further ado, please enjoy me talking to Brandon Collins and Justin Brown of the Medium Popcorn Podcast and our reviews of Promising Young Woman and Pieces of a Woman. Both available, one Promising Young Woman available on VOD, and Pieces of a Woman is available on Netflix.
Yeah, because like everything is being released streaming and things like that. It's like what's what? Who is this?
And it's becoming like a prestige market in a way, like the Oscar frontrunners. Like for instance, Nomadland is like a frontrunner on so many critics' lists and stuff like that. Frances McDormand, and she's what it says, a nomad, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I watched it in its premiere at TIFF, and I was like, I was literally putting together a Lego set because I was so bored. Like, and I was just like, this is probably one of the most boring front runners I've ever seen for Best Picture or Oscar. And no one's going to see this, especially no people of color. We don't have time for 2 hours of just watching white people be homeless and just like travel the world in an RV.
Mm-hmm. It excites me to see it because of the buzz. And I remember texting you about it and you said, it's all right. But, you know, like Frances McDormand, she's one of those actors where she's great, but like, I'm thinking just she's already won and you want to see it because the critics are buzzing about it. But I'm, you know, thinking about the films that we're going to discuss.
Both of them are better. Including Viola Davis. You put her in there. I'm hearing Zendaya is really good. I'm going to watch Malcolm and Marie tomorrow. So I'm hearing those are way better. But for some reason, Frances is at the top.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
She's an OG. She's won twice, but it's like, I get it, and she's always going to be in consideration now, but it's like there's so many other female performances that are really strong that we've seen already. I think maybe I got this. I don't know if this is official or not, but I did see where I think that's going to come out on Hulu within the next month or so, Nomadland.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited to see it, but the one that I've been trying to see for the longest time in the virtual film festival circuit has been Minari.
I have a screener.
Okay.
That, and I saw that a few weeks ago. It's good. It's good.
Okay.
It's a quiet film about a family that moves to middle America to try to farm. It's an Asian, they're Korean. And Steven Yeun is really, really good as the father. The grandmother, who's that actress, she's probably going to get nominated. She was fantastic. Uh-huh. Even the little boy was really good. Like it's just a good, like family drama.
Okay. Yeah. Really. I mean, I'm really excited to see that one. That's one that I'm, cause you can't, it just, the hype just builds every time that I can't get a ticket. So it's like, God damn, this shit is fucking great. And like the last, you know, I've just become really drawn to these Asian filmmakers with, you know, you guys hear me talk about Columbus all the time. I recently saw this movie Gook, which came out in 2017, the same year as Columbus. Justin Chan directed that one, and it was just like, well, damn, these motherfuckers, I tend to like their shit. So now,
Asian directors are definitely underrated, especially like Asian American stories, like Better Luck Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like I think 2 years ago. And that movie still holds up. It's still really good. And it's also weird because it's considered canon for Fast and Furious.
Yeah, that's weird.
I did see your tweet about that.
I was just like, how is this weird, Justin Lin? Because...
But, you know, at the same time, I think it just maybe because they the Asian films, they have a different style of storytelling than what we're used to. And, you know, the Hollywood formula has pretty much just been like... It's like so overdone 1,001 times, and the fact that you're just doing something, it's just very refreshing.
Yeah, I mean, Parasite. Mm-hmm. The reason why that, like, I think did so well is because it was a really effective way of talking about class. That,
yeah.
Like, for some reason, American filmmakers and writers just don't quite want to be as honest as like I feel like they were in Parasite, because they were like these fake rich people trying to pretend like, you know, they're all great and like, you know, probably have liberal leanings politically, and then they're talking shit about the people that work for them.
Yeah it's you know, and I was thinking, like, even with a guy like Ang Lee, who is Asian, and he is like, he does one of my favorite family dramas, The Ice Storm, which is just white people in fucking Connecticut.
White people trying to fuck each other. That's all.
Yeah. Key parties and shit. And it's great. And it's almost like, it's like he is, it's an unflinching portrayal of this part of America in this period of time without like without like not making judgment. It's just like, these are these people's lives and we're experiencing it and we're not trying to shade anything. It's just like, no, this is what happened back then. You know, then this is, you know, what still happens, but this is what's going on. I'm not trying to sugarcoat it or anything. And you could see that with, you know, I'm trying to think of another film that he did, like, you know, like an American Story, which would have been Brokeback Mountain. Also, it's just like, no judgment. This is just, these people were capturing their behavior and that's it, you know? So I want to get into this before we get into our films that we're going to talk about today. I wanted to talk to you guys about what you're watching, what you've recently seen that you've liked, that you want to share with the listeners. Justin, you start us off.
All right. So, you know, I'm, for the most part, I'm not a big series watcher, but I've gotten into two series, which I think are really good. That, so one is, Snowfall.
The John Singleton FX show, right?
Yeah. So I've just started watching that on Hulu. You know, obviously we have some, if you haven't heard about the show, it's about a young man who's basically getting into the sell of cocaine in the early 80s. Right. And, you know, black actor is our lead. He's, you know, there's a bunch of different bit characters within it, but it's a real kind of gritty story. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like a Breaking Bad in the sense of, like, you see this kid slowly starting to change, you know, because, you know, these situations that he put himself into, he has to adapt to it. And it's just very interesting. The other one that I've really, I've been deep diving into is Warrior on HBO Max. Mm. So this series is actually the original. It was the original concept for Kung Fu, the old David Carradine show from back in the day. So it was actually originally written by Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee pitched it to the studio. The studio was just like, yeah, Asian lead, we don't know about that, but we'll give it to this white dude. And they stole the show from him. So basically, this show was actually the original treatment of in Bruce Lee's memoirs and things like that. And they actually made a show of it. So it follows a Chinese a man who comes to San Francisco in the late 1800s, yeah, to find his sister who moved like 2 years ago. And then basically he gets involved with like kind of like the Chinese gangs in Chinatown. Then you have corrupt police, you have labor issues because, you know, the Irish don't like the Chinese taking the jobs. And it's just, there's obviously a lot of fighting, but it's like really solid acting, you know, for the most part, one of the largest all Asian casts, Asian character base I've seen in a show in a very long time, but it's like, it's really, really good. That's what I'm in right now.
Okay. And Warrior's a brand new show, right?
Well, no, it was on Cinemax.
Oh, okay.
HBO Max. Oh, you know, got it. But they're saying, because, well,
that was smart for Cinemax to do, because no one was really paying extra for that.
Well, but the thing is, like, once a pandemic happened, Cinemax, they cut all their shows. Mm. So everything just got canceled. And, you know, and then HBO Max absorbed it. But then, so HBO Max is talking about that they actually may continue the Warrior series because, you know, it's getting, you know, some pretty good fanfare on the site, which I hope it does because it's fucking awesome. I think I have like 3 episodes left in the second season. It's 2 seasons right now.
Oh, cool. Cool. Thanks, Justin. What about you, Brandon?
I've actually started watching a show called Party Down, which I've been told about a lot.
Oh, yeah. That's a really good show.
And it's actually really, really funny. Mm-hmm. The wife and I, we watch Veronica Mars. It's by the same creative team as that.
Yeah.
And so, like, definitely been enjoying that. Been watching Veronica Mars season 4 that Hulu did, which is actually, that series is actually really good. Especially with like the break from the 3rd season, they did like the movie that was like done on GoFundMe. So I watched that recently. So that's what I've been into. Movies wise, I mean, besides the 2 that we're talking about today, haven't really seen much new, especially something that was like noteworthy. I think a few of the films that are still like left to watch, like Malcolm Marie, Judas and the Black Messiah, like those are the things I'm looking forward to. And then Justin and I are going to be covering Sundance, so there's a bunch of films that we're going to be able to check out.
Nice.
That I'm excited about. But Yeah, recently it's just been, I mean, I've just been reading a lot more than watching things, to be completely honest, just because we watch so many movies for the podcast that if nothing's really intriguing me outside of that, then I kind of just wait.
You kind of get blah with
it. Yeah, Yeah, that's why Sundance is so exciting, because this is before, like, you know, the movies become like the Oscar contenders and stuff like that. So you get a sneak peek, because there's no blockbusters coming out, like, especially now with everything being pushed back again till the fall.
So, how do you guys feel about that with the blockbusters? I mean, I personally, I kind of feel like I love seeing them, but it's kind of like, if you keep giving these movies like they're given now, like they're putting out these, a lot of them have been pretty strong. I think despite everything we went through last year, we continue to go through, there's been some really good films put out.
Well, you got to make sure it's worth the wait, right? Like, because Wonder Woman, we did that and we were like, what the hell is this?
Oh yeah, that was not
good. And then we were like, solid B at best. So, you know, when I see
things, you guys gave it a B?
What?
I think we give it a small.
Yeah, so
that's a passing. That's just a passing grade. That's like a C minus D.
Yeah, it was a bit rough. And then I think for me, like when I see things like Morbius be pushed to 2022, I'm like, no one is like waiting for this movie. No one is hyped. Even Jared Leto isn't hyped for this movie. Like, why does Sony keep doing this? So there's certain films, and I think like a. Based on Marvel's schedule, they're going to be putting out a new movie every like 2 months, which is, I think, going to actually saturate, even though there's been a long wait. Yeah. I think that that's actually going to possibly hurt them more than help. Speaking of Marvel real quick, I did watch WandaVision. I actually got access to the first three episodes like 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And so I was just waiting for everyone to like say their piece, because I'm like, this show, if it wasn't a Marvel show, I probably wouldn't have watched after the first episode.
Yeah, tapped out.
Wow.
I haven't started watching it yet.
Now, people are saying it's weird. I kind of want to wait until all the nerds watch it and then binge them all.
You should wait till the whole season's out available. It's very much like Mr. Robot, where if you watch it week after week, like week by week, you're going to be like, this is really frustrating. I don't really know what this is leading towards, but if you can binge it all in like a weekend,
you'll get it because it's fresh.
It flows. It's like a full story.
No, I got to say, like with the blockbusters, everything being pushed back, I don't mind it, because I also kind of feel like after watching all of these films, you know, just at home and for the last few months, I feel like I need to get a new TV. I need to get a bigger TV to like fully engross myself in the experience. Uh-huh. And if I'm going to watch a blockbuster film, I want to feel like I'm doing it right. And, you know, feel like I'm, you know, get that best, like, you know, let's jump into this world. So I kind of like, I want to get a new TV. I'm going to get a, you know, bigger screen so I could just kind of immerse myself a little bit
more. Now's the time to do it, Justin. If you want to get, it's like Super Bowl playoffs time. I was in Walmart. I saw maybe a 65-inch. No, it was like a Hashitashi, but that shit was like,
well, no, the
300.
No, the President's Day sales are all starting to kick off, you know, next month. So,
well, we got like a 65-inch in the living room, Samsung, about, I would say like a year ago, maybe, and it was only like a 700, I think.
Wow. Yeah, that's good.
It's really good. It's like really, it's 4K. It's a smart TV. So
see, my thing is about the operating systems. I think I may go with something with a Google operating system. Because like the Roku is cool, you know, for, you know, certain things.
And they're about to get all that Quibi content.
Exactly. But I think I'm going to go with a Google operating system, because it just seems like, you know, for one, they have all the apps that are available for them. And like the Samsung operating system is just kind of wonky sometimes. There's a lot of things that aren't available on the Samsung that pisses me off.
Yeah,
like the NFL Network. That's like one of the main things I watch. I have on my second TV. I have it. It's a Samsung, and I can't get it on there. And I'm just like
LG's pretty good. My dad has a 65-inch LG. And so I got a 50-inch LG maybe two years ago. And it's got Apple TV on it as one of the apps. It's got the Google Play. It's got Showtime, Stars, and all that. The only thing it doesn't have is HBO Max, but I can get that on my PlayStation. So,
oh, okay. Yeah, but it just sucks they have to go to different devices first.
Yeah. But I was surprised they had Apple TV on there, which is pretty dope.
Yeah.
Well, I want to get into this, guys. I'm super excited to have you on. And when I asked you about this, I said, why don't we just talk about white women for a couple hours?
I know. I was like, I can talk white starlets with you, Chris.
White women aficionados.
Let's use our black platforms and talk about some white women going through some shit. The first movie I want to talk about, Promising Young Woman. And as always, and in the spirit of you guys being here from the Medium Popcorn Podcast, we're going to spoil this, but
spoil the shit out of it.
We'll spoil the shit out of it. And I don't think that any value would be lost on either of these films. We're going to talk about Promising Young Woman and Pieces of a Woman, because these are films that you can, even if you know about them, you still need to experience these.
Yeah.
So what I'll do with this first one, as I always do on this show, I'll read the Google blurb, no matter how good or bad it is. I'll read it and then we'll just talk about it from an overall perspective, and then we'll break it down as we see fit. Okay. All right. So Promising Young Woman, written and directed by Emerald Fennell. And here's the Google blurb. Nothing in Cassie's life is what it appears to be. She's wickedly smart, tantalizingly cunning, and she's living a secret double life by night. Now, an unexpected encounter is about to give Cassie a chance to right the wrongs from the past. This film stars Carey Mulligan as Cassandra Thomas and Bo Burnham as Ryan. Brandon, how about you give us your overall thoughts on this film?
Dude, this movie surprised the fuck out of me. I had heard like some rumblings about it, and like I had a screener and I put it on for Tati and I just like one random night. I was like, hey, I got this. Like, I heard Carey Mulligan's really good. She's pretty solid in most of what I've seen. I've been checking her out since An Education.
Sure.
I've always been kind of back and forth about whether or not I think she's hot or not, but that's a whole other thing. But in this movie, I was like, from the first scene with like Adam Brody and a homie from Detroiters, and I was hooked. And then, you know, the progression of like finding out why she's doing this stuff. Then she has the opportunity with Alison Brie's character popping up to like start rectifying some things for her college friend. Just the story development, kind of learning that she's such a broken person because she has all this guilt. And then, you know, the whole love story with Bo Burnham. I love the plot twist with that. Tati kind of peeped it. She's like, if they went to college together, he might be involved in this shit. Mm-hmm. And then when it's revealed that he kind of was, I mean, and then the bachelor party, I mean, we literally were sitting in our chair like, she really dead? We're like, no, she's like pretending, right? And then it's like, no, like the next morning when Max Greenfield comes in, it's like, oh shit, she really did the OG sacrifice to make sure these niggas went to jail.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's like, she had to plan it so well to know that they were going to, you know, like set themselves up where they're like burying the body and stuff like that. Like it was just very meticulous. It was a very dark movie, but I loved it. I it was one of my favorites.
Yeah. What about you, Justin?
I guess my thing is Cassie. She is diabolical. She is diabolical. She is a supervillain in this film. I mean, but at the same time, she's not a villain. You know, she's obviously somebody with a lot of pain, and I guess also a little bit of regret because she feels she
has a lot of regret.
No, I'm saying, but she feels almost responsible for what happened to her friend Nina, even though this isn't her responsibility. It's about, you know, how shitty dudes are. And especially dudes in college, and especially dudes of affluence, which obviously it seemed like a lot of these guys were when they were younger. I will say, you know, Carey Mulligan, she's playing a 30-year-old. There's a bit of a stretch. She looked a lot. I'm like, I didn't buy that. I didn't.
35. She's 35. It's funny. I was listening to this, watching this review these two gay guys who review podcasts, and they were like, she's a little, that's, they're like, she's a little too old. And I was like, well, you know.
Yeah, no, because when I first saw her sitting at the bar, like all sprawled out, I was like, okay, so this is like, maybe late 30s, maybe early 40s young lady.
Damn. Whatever.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You can see it in her face. I 30-year-old, I didn't believe her. I didn't believe her as a 30-year-old. But her acting was solid. Yeah, hey, man, this is what I do. I mean, yo, the level of what she brought to that character, like the fierceness and how angry she was. Like, I love that. The fact that she spit in that dude's coffee and he had to drink that shit. I was like, whoa,
yeah.
Yo, you must really want it. Yeah. It's like, I don't think I want anything that bad. yeah, I mean, the twists and turns, it kind of gave me very the Girl on the Train vibes.
Ooh.
You know? So it's like, there was just a lot of things that were just going on that, like, it really kept me captivated.
Yeah.
Especially, yeah. Like, mind you, like, you know, Jackson Pollock just got home from Finland, and I'm sitting there, like, picked him up at the airport. It's been a long day. Sat down and watched this film, and like, I was tired. I did not, you know, yawn, bat an eye, or anything. Like, I was completely in, which is like, it's hard to do.
Yeah, it flows really well, and it's just intense. You're like, where's this going? Because she's like meeting with Alfred Molina, who's all shook and fucking crazy.
Yeah,
and then Connie Britton, who, I mean, Connie Britton looked better than Carey Mulligan, but that's because I have a thing for redheads.
Yeah. I do too. My Instagram is sneakers, Last of Us shit, black girls with fat asses and redheads. Yeah. I'm glad I'm not alone in that, because it's just like, white women, like, a woman is a woman. If she's hot, she's hot. But like, for white women, it's like, redheads do it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I still think Carey Mulligan's a bad one. She's bad. Like, I think she's hot, but
she's pretty good. She's definitely a beautiful woman. She was miscast as a 30-year-old.
It's almost like I feel like stylistically it's doing something like Emerald Fennell, the director, she was saying, you know, she was using these references from like visual references from Virgin Suicides to Die For, American Psycho, and these Lifetime 90s movies. And I rewatched To Die For, and I hadn't seen it in years.
That's a Nicole Kidman movie, right?
Nicole Kidman, Joaquin Phoenix. And it was just like, okay, like, I get it. It's like that main character. Everybody else is kind of like grounded in reality in a certain way. But Nicole Kidman isn't. Like, she's of that world, but kind of not. And so something's a little off. And I kind of see that with Carey Mulligan as Cassie in this film. Like, it's something, because and it makes the her not say that again.
She was like detached from everything. Like,
she
was like, she was only all in when she was like the double life of like fucking with men or getting back at the people that were involved in her friend's thing. Other than that, she really had everything at an arm's length, because I think at the end of the day, she was probably going to end up doing some self-harm no matter what.
Yeah.
And I think she just got an opportunity with the Bo Burnham and Alison Brie characters popping up, and then saw kind of the end game, so to speak.
Yeah. And it go ahead.
I just got to say, it's like, so the game that she was playing at the beginning of the movie, well, throughout the first half of the movie, the first act or so, with her letting these guys take her home drunk.
Mm.
And then just be popping up is like, I'm not drunk. What the fuck are you doing? Leave women alone. Things like that. And, you know, I was kind of just like, you know, like I dug it because, you know, I could tell you personally about like a lot of the women that I've ever dated in my life. I'd say about 90 plus percent of them have a situation like this, of like either some form of sexual assault or like dudes taking them home drunk and things like that. So like, I was for all that, but I also implore women to not play this game because that's a very, very dangerous game. You never know. Because like, I'm like, I thought that either she was murdering these guys.
Well, yeah, they do the fake fake out with the red stuff run down her arm and the it's ketchup.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, I thought she was either murdering these guys or you know, like setting them up, you know, for a real hard fall. Mm-hmm. But it's like, you know, drunk guys or even not drunk guys, you know, they're dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So, dudes are sober, too.
Yeah, exactly. So like,
yeah, because the one that actually was the worst one at the beginning when all the dudes were talking shit like, oh, I want to fuck her, blah, blah, blah. Adam Brody, who's like the, oh, shucks, guys, we should just check on her. He's the one that tries to do this shit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the thing. You know, I want to go back to my point a little bit about her not looking like she's 30. That to me, like, that's kind of why it works for me. Like when I was saying about like everybody else being grounded in some bit of reality, it's like her world is a little different. So it doesn't really matter like how she looks. She's just like the bait. And she's been doing this shit for quite some time. She's been doing it for years. I was looking at an interview this morning with Emerald Fennell and Carey Mulligan. I think it was on Variety where she was saying like there's a bruise somewhere, like she's got some bruise somewhere, like it didn't always work in her favor. Like it, like she got out of it, but it didn't always work because she opens that book with all the time she's done it with the strikes and everything like that. It's like she's been doing that for a long ass time.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like, and I love, one of the things I loved about this movie, they picked these dudes that almost everybody in this film plays against type, like Adam Brody,
Bo Burnham, even
Burnham, Sam Richardson, the guy that plays Al, what's his name?
Is that the one who kills her?
Yeah, Chris Lowell. Yeah. They're all
Mars. Yeah,
yeah. They're always like these. I'm nice. I'm a nice guy.
Yeah.
And it plays with that. Like this whole film plays with that shit. And
I loved when that character was crying though, when Max Greenfield's like digging the grave from the body and shit to burn it, and he's just like.
I want to get to that a little later, but what are some like. I don't know. Like, what is some things that you liked about this movie? Like, I mean, I don't know if you want to dive into like you. I marked down the portions of the movies like where she gets Alison Brie, she gets Connie Britton, she gets Alfred Molina's character, and then finally, you know, to Al Monroe, the Chris Lowell character.
Yeah.
What are things that you appreciated about this movie? What did you like?
I mean, I love the writing. I think the pacing was really good. It felt like there was no fat on this whatsoever. So I didn't feel like any scene was wasted. I think all the performances, even from like Laverne Cox, who had a very small role, to Molly Shannon, who popped up as the friend's mom. Like everyone did really well. They did what they were supposed to do. And I think it's intriguing because you don't quite like Cassie, but you understand what she's doing, and you understand like the mission behind what she's doing, even though you know it's going to be really dangerous. The only thing, and I actually appreciate this is actually one thing I did like, is that they kept talking about medical school, right, and how she was such a good student. And so I'm thinking, well, one of these situations that's going to come into play where she's going to show like, you know, that she's like going to castrate a dude or something like that, and never happened.
Well, she tried to.
When?
I don't
at
think
at the end.
I don't think so.
I don't think that she actually was trying to.
No.
I think
you don't think she was trying to carve her friend's name into dude?
No, just like the way she faked out with Alison Brie having sex with that dude and you know, the thing with Connie Britton's daughter, everything was a fake out.
Yeah. I think that was all a setup. Because if you notice when she was handcuffing him to the bed, things like that, like the other one she did pretty you know, it was kind of loose around the wrist. The one that he pulled off, she had it pretty tight, but the back portion wasn't as tight though. So it basically gave him the leverage to rip that shit off.
Oh, so you think she did that on purpose?
Yes.
I mean, yeah, because she was looking to die.
Yeah.
You think she was looking to die? Like, she was fighting for her life. I mean, I guess
Right? Like,
the natural response.
Yeah, because like, I mean, let's say like, even if you're trying to drown yourself, your body is just immediately going to say, no, like I got to fight this, right? Mm-hmm. People that hang themselves, they their bodies still do the same thing. Like, mm-hmm. I think that was just her natural reaction. But that's when I realized, damn, this is her end game for this. Because when you realize that she actually is dead, you're like, wow, she planned this really well. Because all of them are there. All the people that were at that party, like, except for Bo Burnham, were there. Mm-hmm. And so she's like, I got all these dudes because they're all accomplices, yeah. depending on what they do with my body.
I wonder why he wasn't there.
I think he had to work, right? I think they were like, because she had to make sure he wasn't going to be there. Mm. I forget there was like a scene or something like that where
no, when he
said he couldn't make it to the bachelor party, right?
Yeah, he said, don't you tell them that I'm going to be there. And I think she made a comment of don't show up.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I want to see what about you, Justin? What else did you like about this one?
I do like the way that they built the relationship between her and Bo Burnham. The Paris, they're singing the Paris Hilton song in the pharmacy, which was really funny because I didn't know Paris Hilton even had a song.
Yeah, she has a few.
Yeah.
Brandon's like, I have her whole catalog. I know. I didn't know. I knew she sung, but I didn't know about that song or anything.
Yeah, I didn't know it was a thing. But yeah. As they started to build their relationship and things like that, and it seemed like she was kind of, you know, making that turn and just like, you know what, you know, I need to just live my life and just move on. I kind of felt it was just like, oh, okay, something's going to happen.
Yep.
And it's like, we're going to be revealed that this dude is trash, just like everybody else. Mm-hmm. But like,
and it's crazy because the movie sets us up for that.
Yes.
Because they're showing everyone is like a Bo Burnham. Like, I'm actually a really good guy. I'm not like the other dudes. It's revealed. No, he's still a piece of shit, too.
Well, and like going back to that, why am I forgetting this dude's name? Old McLovin.
Yeah, McLovin.
Oh, yeah. He is in this movie. Yeah.
I mean, that scene, like, I thought that was actually a really, really good scene in the way that she was just like, oh, you're not like the other dudes. She's like, I'm a nice guy. Yeah, I'm sure you are. Just like the other guys. They're all, you know what? The thing is, they're all nice guys. I think that the scene of guys that she, you know, got, you know, with kind of like the date rape type of deal. Like, I thought that was the best one. And that really drove home who these guys are and who they think they are and how they operate and what's in their mind.
Quick aside to that. The dude who plays McLovin, Christopher, I think
Mintz-Plasse.
He's the reason why Booksmart isn't as good as Superbad, because Booksmart didn't have a McLovin. And I watched that movie like 2 weeks ago, and he fucking is like one of the funniest characters I've seen in a teen comedy.
It's a great movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought Booksmart was good. I liked Booksmart, but I think there was so much behind it that it kind of turned people off. Mm-hmm. Like, did just so much the women power. It's just like, no, I like these two actresses. They're funny and it's a good movie. But I think people just kind of just like expected it to do. You're not beating Aladdin that weekend. You're not fucking beating Aladdin. We talked about that when we did, I believe we did when we did, what's the Brightburn?
Yeah.
Cause I saw both those movies that weekend and I was just like, you're not beating Aladdin.
Make so
just be a fucking cult hit and move on. You know,
for real though, for real, people need to stay in their lanes.
Yeah, that's what Booksmart is. You know, I agree with you guys. I love, and then even the parents with Jennifer Coolidge, Stifler's mom, is like trying.
Underrated comedic actress, man. I saw her in this Tiffany Haddish Rose Byrne movie recently.
Oh, that's a good movie. Yeah,
I wasn't the biggest fan of it, but I thought that she and homie from Pose, they were fucking hilarious. And then it made me remember Jennifer Coolidge and on The Best of Show and those movies. I'm like, she and Catherine O'Hara are probably like the funniest actresses.
Well, they've been doing it for a long time, man. Like with those Christopher Guest flicks, I mean, they're great. And it was kind of interesting to see her play a subdued character. Mm-hmm. The thing that was fucked me up about this movie was like her parents on her 30th birthday give her a fucking suitcase. Like, get the fuck out. Like, you know, your daughter's going through this trauma and it's like, you need to get the fuck out. So it's almost everybody was just kind of playing against type. I love the fact it was kind of like a mixture between like, to me, like Kill Bill and Hard Candy with a dash of like Scott Pilgrim versus the World, like how each chapter was with somebody who she was gonna, you know, get revenge on.
It was like a less frantic Edgar Wright movie. You're right.
Yeah.
Comparison.
And like people that you normally respect, each of the four people, like you see them in something and they kind of have some kind of, I wouldn't say Christopher Lowell, but you see him as a dude that's like, oh, he's a nice guy. But like Connie Britton, Alfred Molina, Alison Brie, like these actors are normally cast as people that you root for. And you're like, oh, these people, they're pieces of shit. And she takes each of them out. And then you get to the point where it's like Alfred Molina's character, who's Jordan Green, the lawyer who tried to silence her. He knows that he's fucked up.
Yep.
And I think that's where you see the shift in Cassie, where she's just kind of like, okay, this isn't, where is this going? Cause it got to a point in the movie where, like you guys said, it was so well paced that you get to the point like, where is this shit going? And you still have, like, we still have time on the clock. And it's just like, okay, well, this, it can't end any other way than it ended the more that you think about it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, what did you think about? And I guess we can just kind of wrap it up with this. Like, what did you think about we'll wrap this film up. Like, what did you think about that scene in particular? Like, she's at the bachelor party. She's in that room. Maybe like even first, like before that scene when she's in the car and then the orchestral version of Toxic comes on.
Oh, that was dope. I forgot about that. That was a dope song. Yeah.
How did you guys feel about that sequence? Justin, how about you start?
I mean, obviously I knew it was like, all right, she's gonna have to go in there as a stripper. That's the only way she's gonna get in the bachelor party. Mm-hmm. But you know, when she was walking up the dirt driveway with no shoes on, just the stockings on, I was just like, oh, her feet, this would be terrible. You know, I'm walking around like this, that would be terrible. Like, she really gives zero fucks right now. But like the moment she said, like, I saw where it was going that, you know, she was, you know, trying to divide and conquer. Like when she started pouring the drinks, things like that, it's like, oh, okay, there's something in that alcohol, yeah. You know, because she brought it in herself and all this stuff. Like, but that's where we got her medical background. She knew just enough how to put in there to knock everybody out.
Yeah.
But then she got him in the room and, you know, things started to transpire. And then like the, her murder happens. I mean, I will say I felt a sort of way about him kneeling, you know, with the pillow over her, like on her chest and face and things like that. I you know, that was a little bit triggering, you know, with, you know, the world.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
It was just one of those times you're watching a film and like my mouth was just dropped. I didn't. Yeah. I'm like, wait. What? It's like, wait, yeah. what's going on right now?
It's like she set this up. So it's not like he's just like actively trying to kill her. It's like, no, she put herself in this situation purposely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, whoa. Like, because at the end of the day, though, if you think about Cassandra's plan and her behavior, it was going to end in a bad way no matter what.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, the follow up to that scene and, I mean, to that scene, you know, then you have, you know, the full plan is revealed and like all the things that she set up beforehand, before actually going to that bachelor party, you know, that's giving you that those kind of Gone Girl vibes. And it's just like, whoa, she is.
Bo Burnham realizes like he fucked the wrong one.
Yeah.
Like when his face at the wedding, when they're about to get arrested, he's just like, oh, shit.
Well, and then on top of that, Max Greenberg running away at the wedding.
I mean, Max Greenfield, I mean, he was great on New Girl. I loved him in this movie because it was kind of the same smug, like,
yeah,
like Ivy League mm-hmm. dude, but like he immediately went into warrior mode when he saw that body.
Yeah, that was fucking crazy. Like, it reminded me of like, it's like the energy.
All the Bad Things, or what was that movie with John Favreau?
Very Bad Things.
Yeah,
it was like a shift in energy. You know, like it's like when you play a video game and you die. I'm gonna mention The Last of Us Part Two. If you're Ellie, you're going in there, and there's like, get the fuck out. You're in like a Seattle, and you're infiltrating the WLF, and they kill you. It's like it's over. Normally in a video game, when you die, or if you're playing Spider-Man, it's like, that's it for you, Spider-Man. And you're dead. And it just plays on with the people that killed you. It's like the energy just shifts with these two dudes. Mm-hmm. And it's like, fuck, man, that motherfucker was laying in the bed with that body. And it was just like his homie comes in and it's just like, what the fuck? And there was, again, still time on the clock. And it's like Emerald Fennell, she's fucking with us hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Talk about unflinching. She's just like, no, you're going to sit with this. You're going to sit with this and really deal with what the fuck just happened. And they burn her body. And it's just like, you see her fingernails, like her. Yeah, and it's just like, God damn.
Yeah, that's when you knew it was like for real. Cause I was like, oh, she's going to wake up and like, you know, do another like,
ha-ha!
You know, yeah, but it yeah. Was like, oh no. And then, yeah, it was wild.
I did not like that. I just didn't like how that made me feel. And then the director, you know, she said in an interview, she said, you know, heroes die gallant, men die gallantly all the time. Like you look at Gladiator, you look at like, you know, certain movies where the hero dies, you know, in a brave way. And it's like, well, that's true. But it's like, shit, I ain't want to see that. I was rooting for Russell Crowe in that one.
I mean, but even so, it's like, but heroes die gallantly, like you said, in all these films. But like, they also didn't become the victim to the, you know, the big bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because like he like those, you know, like Maximus dying in that film is like he also like got his.
Yeah.
Yeah. He got his off before he died. And mm-hmm. like that, you know, so there was.
Yeah. He actually made sure the bad guy was dead, too. It wasn't some Game of Thrones shit where you think the mountain's dead and then he squeezes your head like a water bell.
Yeah. Like mm-hmm. so like that's the thing. It was just like and in this case is like. She was taken out by the predators. Like she
left, yeah.
She sacrificed herself to the predators to then bring them down. It's just like
to give justice to her friend.
Yeah, I'm just like, yeah. But was there another way? I think
she was trying to find another way to like, you know, alleviate the guilt and regret she had. And then she actually was able to go directly to the source. And she's like, how can I get, you know, justice for my friend? And it's probably, you know, they were all rich, right? So they were going to be able to get lawyers and stuff like that. She had to make sure it was like in a situation where they couldn't get away with it.
Well, you know, I also think that, you know, maybe part of it is because, you know, after, you know, dating Ryan for, you know, X amount of time and things are going well, then finding out that she's trash is like, maybe it's just the fact that she doesn't have trust in people anymore.
He recorded it, right? That's the whole thing. He was the one who recorded it, or he was just there.
He was just there and didn't do shit.
Okay, because he heard his voice, but I didn't know if he was the one holding the phone.
He was there laughing and whatever. Yeah. And but like other dude was talking. To tell you the truth, the vibes that I got from it, one is that Nina, she kind of spiraled and she ended up killing herself.
Yes,
It wasn't said, but I'm pretty sure that's where we're going here. And I don't think it was necessarily a thing where everybody watched and whatever. I think they probably gang.
That's what I got too. But yeah, they didn't go into detail.
I just listening to the tape, you know, hearing Ryan's voice and things like that. Ryan was involved. I think Ryan got in there as well.
Mm.
And I don't mean that in the crude way, but like I think he was part of it.
I also love how like Carrie Mulligan's like everyone just keeps saying like everyone's just young and having fun.
We were kids.
Yeah. And I was like Alison Brie, she's like, we were kids, we were stupid, we did stupid things. And it's like, yo, but you're adults. You're this
you motherfuckers were in med school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really loved like she was trying to be like, no, you need to be held accountable.
Well, and you know, a part of me is just like I realize I wasn't a kid once I turned 18 because I knew that anything that I did, I was going to adult jail.
And you're also black. So
well, exactly. So
white like, people can be kids till they're like 50.
Yeah. I mean, so it's like when people say like, you know, young and da-da-da-da-da, it's just like, yeah, but you know, I don't have that.
Well, that's the whole thing that's happening now with like all these kids, like, you know, posting racist shit on social media and like getting their college admissions revoked or like losing their jobs. And they're like, but I was young, you know, when I posted that, or I'm a young person, I make mistakes. It's like, yeah, but your parents and adults in your life should have been like, once you hit this threshold, like you're fully accountable to your actions.
There was somebody was dunking on somebody on Twitter yesterday, like a couple of days ago or something, where one of the insurrectionists went into Nancy Pelosi's office and took a laptop or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She got released.
Russia.
And yeah, and they were comparing it to Khalif Browder, who maybe stole a backpack when he was 16. I don't think he did, but then he was in the prison system. He got out, then ended up, you know, killing himself. You know, it was just from something that he probably didn't even do, you know. So it's definitely two different Americas. She was, I think, what broke her. Well, the first date where she went out with Bo Burnham and he was like, oh, I'm by my place. So I didn't know that I was by my hall. And she was like, God damn it, this motherfucker.
Yeah.
And then like she's like, well, maybe I need to check myself. And she fell for the dude. And then she was like, damn, this motherfucker ain't shit either. And then she goes to. I'm trying to remember where it is when she.
I feel like that was honest. That's what I really loved about this movie is that was an honest thing that happens.
Yeah,
like, this wasn't a fairy tale thing where like he actually is a good guy. It's like no, all dudes have some darkness in them that makes them pieces of shit. Like, let's just like call it how it is. Like we each have our own vices that, in some respects, makes us assholes, right?
Yeah.
And it was like, what is Bo Burnham's thing? And then she found out and was like, got it. Like, that's authentic to the story.
Yeah, but I mean, unfortunately for him, his thing was like attached to the original sin of film.
Yeah.
So it was like, yeah, you really fucked up.
Yeah.
It was like, you should have stayed your ass wherever the hell you were and not come. You should have just drank that spit and just, took it on the chin.
I think the biggest thing, too, that set it up, didn't she ask him if he was there? That night he said no, right?
Oh, he said he heard about it.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He alluded that he wasn't even
like
there.
He didn't know. Yeah. He didn't know, something like that.
Like, nigga. Well, because even like, what's my girl from SNL? Molly Shannon was like, you gotta let this go. And she couldn't let it go. She couldn't get over it. And she was like, well, I'm gonna go.
I mean, they grew up together, right?
Yeah,
her and the girl. So
they were five.
Yeah. So yeah. I mean,
as her sister.
If that's the person that like you could count on, because obviously she couldn't count on her parents, she couldn't count on any love interest in her life, and that person's gone, she feels guilty about it. She's like, I gotta avenge my friend. And sometimes when you avenge people, you're gonna have some casualties, including yourself, possibly.
Yeah, she was never going to be happy because there was that scene in the coffee shop where she's like, yeah, I could have, if I wanted a better job, I could do that in 10 minutes. Like, this is me putting on my koofy, my woke koofy segment, my Damon Wayans prison guy thing. Like, that's whiteness right there. She's like, yeah, I could do that in 10 minutes, but I don't really want to do that. But nobody knew. I don't think I don't think the Laverne Cox character knew to what extent she was in pain. You know, I don't think she knew that.
Yeah. You know, what's crazy about that, Chris, is like, when the opportunities that are for like, especially like white women and white people in general, like they don't understand like how much value that brings.
Oh, right.
Because like, even like, okay, like let's say you're filling out an application for a job. If you do self-disclose, because before I used to think disclosing that I'm a black male with like these credentials and this experience, maybe should help me, like, you know, stand above the fray. But then I read some articles from like Wall Street Journal and like Fast Company and stuff that said, actually, those things can get filtered and take you out of a contention. Because, you know, as companies say that they're all about diversity, they actually have, like, depending on who's at the top of the companies, they have certain views about people of color that then say, well, if we really are pushed to like have diversity, we'll have like a little pocket that we can go back to that filter. But, you know,
yeah, it's a thing, man. It's like you deal with it in whatever aspect. Like, I know in our field, we talk about it within show business, but even, you know, I'm sure the three of us have been involved in corporate America, and it's like, Aaron still involved in that shit, but like, it's just like, there's such a thing. He's like, oh yeah, I'm black and they're white and they're going to think that what they think is right until they're proven otherwise. And you constantly deal with that every day. And it's hard to not be angry. It's hard not to be angry about it, but it's just like, this is what it is. And I'm going to do what I can to persevere and, you know, overcome it. But I was thinking about that. I was like, God damn, like, you could turn it around, but you're so wounded.
I know you guys, I know we're going to move on to the next film, but I did want to ask what you all thought would happen if this actually had a black protagonist, right? If that was a black woman instead of a white woman, because I was thinking about this the other day. Quentin Tarantino initially wanted to do a movie about a black platoon in, I think, World War II. Or maybe the Vietnam War, and they essentially start killing their white counterparts because they've been cut off from like resources and like pretty much abandoned, right? And I was like, I don't think a black director could make that story. I don't think Hollywood would invest in that stuff. So I'm wondering, if there was a black actress in this movie, would this movie have, you know, getting the acclaim, the attention it's getting?
It would have been a different kind of movie, because we would have turned to murder. We would have turned to her. It would have turned into a revenge film of her murdering these men. Now, if we're talking about like a black woman and the men that she's going after are black men, she would definitely gone the murder route as opposed to doing all of this, because you also have to put into the fact is like black women, you know, they especially in our business, they almost take hold on some of the black masculinity. So that's the role that they're going to write for that woman now for a black woman. And she's like, she's going to turn into a monster and then go after her that way. They're never going to give her that cerebral assassin type feel. Now, if it's a black woman going after white men, I just feel that's just not
that takes on a different vibe.
It does take on a completely different vibe. And then you're going to have, you know, the black bitches being.
I was just thinking, let's say like Tessa Thompson was in this role instead of Carey Mulligan. Like,
all the actors are the same except
her and the parents. Maybe the parents are like black and white or something like that.
Yeah.
Well,
more woke Twitter, you have more black critics. I don't see how she could have died in this white director. How could Emerald Fennell do this to a black woman?
I would also say that I think that she'd have a little bit more support from her family in a way, because like
going to med school and then like getting fucked up and stuff.
When she comes back home, I think because you know how much pride, you know, black people have, especially with a child going off to college. You go into medical school, the pride, you know, that's now times that by 1,000, right? And you go to medical school, things will work out. And because of something like that happen, I think you'd have parents that wouldn't be as kind of dismissive and waspy of her plight. They would just. I think that she'd have far more help as far as from her family and somebody maybe even helping to get this revenge if it hadn't already happened within the last 7 years.
That's fair.
She wouldn't be working at no fucking coffee shop.
Yeah.
she'd be at a corporate. You better get you living in my house. You better get your ass somewhere else than working at no coffee shop. It would be different, man. It would be, you know, I just watched this movie called The Surrogate about this young black girl who has her childhood friend is gay. He's in a marriage with another guy, and she agrees to be the surrogate of a white guy and a black guy get a black couple, an interracial black couple. The white guy is her best friend, and they find out the kid has Down syndrome. And then that's where the conflict begins, to whether she should keep the pregnancy or whatever. Yep. And it's just different. If it was a white girl, it would just be fucking different. And then the parents, like, I feel like you'd almost have to change things. It's like you'd have to consider a lot of other things. I don't think it rolls out in the same way. Cause the surprise with this film was like, I remember seeing the trailer for this well over a year ago. I think when I saw Clemency, the Alfre Woodard movie about, you know, when she's a prison warden, this was like January 2020. And I was like, oh shit, this looks fucking insane. I can't wait. It's going to be a romp. She's going to get revenge on all these dudes that treated her bad. And then you see this movie, it's like, whoa. And you talk about like, you people upset about this white woman being dead. If this is Tessa Thompson dead in the bed like that, dog, this should be a fucking hellfire.
And I'm telling you, it was just, there'd be just so much more violence intertwined. Like when she wakes up, when she's doing the things that she's doing at the beginning, she would have been putting hands on people.
You know, she had to kill some motherfuckers.
Yeah, she would have been putting it, because like, and it's nothing against white women, and it's nothing against talking about how black women react to things, but it's like, I think just as black people, if you're taking that and you're taking that from, you know, white men, you know, who black women already have problems with just in society, you know, and the treatment and such, and a white dude takes you home trying to pull the, you know, this bullshit. I think the hands are going to be thrown.
Yeah.
And she's going to set herself up in the best opportunity to inflict the most damage, as much damage as possible. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that this isn't abundantly a black story to tell, because these things play out differently for us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And in most cases, and you know, it would be like, oh, they kind of didn't believe her and things like that. They wouldn't even investigate it in the first place.
That's a great fucking question, though, man. That's because it makes you look at everything a lot differently, and I would be a lot angrier, like especially if Nina was black. If Nina was black, you know, just like as a fucking human being watching this movie, it's like these people are pieces of shit, and it's just like fuck them, and you kill and the protagonist that you're hoping that prevails. And is unscathed from this, dies. It's like, it's crazy, man. The rollout is just different if it's Tessa. If it's Tessa, it's different. Like what Justin's saying. You know, what do you think, Brandon?
I mean, I agree. I think it takes on a different vibe. You probably have to rewrite some characters, rewrite some situations. Because I was trying to think, like, let's say you put a black actress just in the role. Keep the script the same, all the characters the same. And I think you're right. It wouldn't feel authentic if that's the situation, right? Because it'd be like, no, she's like a black woman's not gonna deal with this bullshit, especially if she's been going through higher education, med school. She's gonna be like, no, this is a crazy situation. Like, also if we're being real, because of the way that society views black women, I think if she went to that bachelor party, she wouldn't have been able to do all of them.
You don't think so?
I don't think. I think some people would have like not partaken in the drinking and stuff, or like partying with her, because you know some people are like, "Oh, I'm not attracted to black women." So especially because of all white dudes.
Really?
I think so. I think she might have had a harder time getting everyone.
No, man. If it's Tessa Thompson, dude, all these black chicks I see on Instagram with these white
exactly
boys,
beef,
they I would think. Not have a problem.
Well, let's put it this way: if she was black, they all would have remembered her because she's the one black girl, or she's the
true. True.
That's true. That's true.
True.
Yeah. So like, they would have been keyed in on her ass a long time ago. Then you're also going to put it in the fact is it's like, if she was all black, then, you know, most likely it's just the way Hollywood goes. They're going to make most of these men that she's going after men of color.
Yep.
And then that's a different. Now, mind you, I'm the kind of person that's like, I've seen people like, and most people like I may have known a little bit here and there, you know, like not a random stranger, yeah. you know, being fucked up at a bar or stuff like that. I'm just like, yo, you good? And they're like, no, I'm just like, yeah. Let's get you the fuck up out of here and send them the fuck home.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
buy an Uber and just send them home. Like, I've done that for people, but it's like, you know, and never in my mind I've even thought. I mean, but then again, it's
but awesome. Even then, that's it's fucking crazy what society is and how men are pieces of shit. Cause you read the report. Like, did you see the report about Uber drivers sexually assaulting people? Like, yeah. I mean, that's fucking crazy.
No, but even, but now, and the point is, I make is like, you know, me being somebody who doesn't drink, you know, it's like, in my mind, like I see a woman who's drunk and I immediately is just like, and even it's like, if it's somebody that like I'm kind of flirting with, stuff like that, the moment they get too drunk, if we have never had a sexual relationship before, and even in the times if we've had a sexual relationship, but the vibe's not there, you know, whatever, it's like, I'm good. It's like at that point, I'm just going to take care of you and make sure you get home all right, because I don't want that smoke.
Yeah.
I don't, because I also feel like me hooking up with a drunk girl, because I don't drink, it comes, I immediately I'm a predator.
Yeah. So
like, I always try to, you know, just take myself out of that situation anyways. But like, you know, I know most people don't see it that way because they're partying and things like that. And, you know, the lines get blurred. And I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's right. I know a lot of it is wrong. But like, that's a hard area to navigate. Mm-hmm. That's a real hard area. And I'm glad I ain't a part of it. Especially now that I'm married.
Blur lines.
Yeah, it's not a thing. Well, how would, in the spirit of your terrific podcast, Medium Popcorn, how would you rate this in bags of popcorn?
I would give this a large. This is like a really good movie. I think the only reason why it's not getting XL is just because it takes a lot out of you. Like, you just, because you're thinking about like men, you think about how society handles, you know, stories about sexual assault. And you're just like left feeling like a piece of shit and like that the world is shitty, but great performances, great direction. I think it's going to get a lot of nominations and rightfully so. Yeah, I think Carey Mulligan did a fantastic job. She'd be right under Viola in regards to best actress.
Okay. Justin, what about you?
Yeah, it's a large. I mean, and even just the fact is, you know, beyond everything we spoke about in this film, is like it does, you know, elicit those conversations about like, hey, what's right, what's wrong? You know, the, you know, how do we, you know, the rules of engagement. With a woman who's even a little bit inebriated, and I think that's important to have, because, you know, obviously that's something that hasn't been spoken about with a lot of men in this country.
Yeah, I would give this one an extra large because it definitely tracked for me. Like, my excitement to see it when it came out, when I saw the first trailer in January of last year, I was like, oh, I want to see this. I like Carey Mulligan. I'm going to see this. And just from all the buzz that it's been getting, it definitely exceeded my expectations because of the way it ended. And I wasn't expecting that. And because it did make us have a conversation like we just had, it made me think about all these things, like especially with the rise of the Me Too movement. It makes me think about, oh, have I been a piece of shit? I was talking to a friend about like a woman that I, oh shit, I shouldn't even be the woman that I was like just a friend, just friends with. Maybe she may have wanted a little more and I didn't. And then I'm thinking, well, why is she Xing me out of this way? It's like the same shit that I've said about women that I had feelings for that didn't have the same feelings back. And my friend was like, well, now you're kind of being a piece of shit, Chris. And I was like, me? But I'm a nice guy, but I'm adorable, come on. So so it definitely provokes things, and it's like I'm really into films that make me feel something viscerally. And by gum, Emerald and company did it for me. They did the damn thing.
I definitely gotta check out Killing Eve after this.
Yeah, Killing Eve is a good. It's a real. It's a good series. It's I definitely recommend it.
Okay.
I just finished up season three. Ooh, maybe a few months ago, mid to late last year, and I The Crown. She was on there, and it's just kind of like, and Vanessa Kirby's in it, and it's just like I want to see it, but then that old shit. The first couple episodes, she was in Africa, and like they was talking bad about them African people. I was like, "Fuck this movie, fuck this show." Everybody's like, the Crown," but I was like, "Fuck them a little bit," you know.
Mm-hmm.
I could wait, you know. But all right, are you guys good? Can we? Do we?
Yeah, yeah, we're good. We're good.
Okay, you guys, no bathroom breaks or anything.
Oh no.
We're
okay,
good,
Okay, great.
Bladders.
Okay, good. So we'll just jump. We'll jump right into Pieces of a Woman. And Pieces of a Woman was directed by Cornel Mundrusco and written by Kata Weber, who I believe are a husband and wife team, who experienced the loss of a child. And I think this is them kind of dealing with that a little bit. That's what I've heard in interviews, but I will read the Google blurb and we'll just get into it. Okay. All right, here we go. Pieces of a Woman, a heartbreaking home birth leaves a woman grappling with the profound emotional fallout, isolated from her partner and family by a chasm of grief. That's a pretty good fucking Google blurb right there.
Yeah. Yep, yep.
That's one of the best ones I think I've ever read. This movie stars Vanessa Kirby as Martha Weiss, Shia LaBeouf as Sean, and Ellen Burstyn as Elizabeth. Let's start with you on this one, Justin. What are your thoughts on this? Your overall thoughts on Pieces of a Woman?
This one was tough. This one was fucking tough because, for one, you know, we jump directly into childbirth. You know what? Like 5 minutes into the film, you know, she's having the baby and she's doing the home birth and everything. And it's, you know, we see crowning, you know, if you weren't prepared for it, just know if you're going to watch it, you're going to see some crowning. And it was a lot. It was very graphic to what childbirth is like. And, you know, and as a father is like, you know, it's a very tense and humbling situation you find yourself in. And I got to say, when, you know, the baby cried for the first time, immediately I heard the cry. And then I heard my son cry for the first time when he was born and just like broke out in tears watching this movie. Cause it's just raw shit that fucking almost getting me right now. It's like, it's just this raw emotion that just comes over you. But then the baby dying, like, it's one of those movies, like, as a parent, that makes your heart break 1,000 times for everybody. And so I felt exactly where they were. And like, even though like I never lost a child in this manner, because like, you know, I know I told Brandon, you know, like, you know, we had a miscarriage over the last a few months.
I'm sorry, man.
I mean, it's all good. It was very early, but like that's something different, because like the child, you know, but actually holding your child in your hand and then it's gone. It's just like, again, like all throughout this movie, like my heart was breaking for Martha. And then you have Sean, who's Shia LaBeouf. And like, my heart was breaking for him.
Yeah, because he's trying to make it better and he's trying to save the marriage, which was already kind of on the fray a little bit.
They weren't married.
Oh, wow.
So their relationship was strong before this happened. But this is what when people lose a child together jointly, whether they're married or not, in a lot of these situations, they don't. So the marriage or a relationship doesn't survive.
I could have sworn Martha said something, though, along the lines of like, we thought the baby would save our relationship.
I didn't remember that.
Okay.
I didn't remember that. I mean, you could be right. I mean, I was just focused on the other stuff.
Yeah.
But like, it's, and then where we're going, I mean, and you know, it's like, I found myself riding the line this entire film. I'm just like, yo, Martha, you're fucking up right now. You're fucking up bad because you're not communicating. But then I'm like, Sean, what the fuck are you doing, bro?
Well, yeah, he starts fucking Snooki from Succession, and you're like, whoa.
Snooki?
What's her name? Snook? No, Sarah the actress late is Sarah Snook. What's her name on...
Snooki's from Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
I forgot what her name is.
You know what? We have to acknowledge that because we can't have an episode of Brandon being on a podcast without fucking up somebody's name. So, I mean, we were fucking golden, I think, through the first part.
Yeah. Here we go, Brandon, on the bullshit.
Uh-oh. All right. It's all good.
Shiv's the character name on Succession.
Yeah. I have not seen... that's one that I got to get into. I got to get into that series.
Yeah. She looks pretty bad on that Succession show. She had like a one scene this first season where she had a white dress and everyone was like, she have a fat ass? And I was like, yeah, okay, go, girl. But yeah. Sorry.
No. Yeah. So it's like, you know, I kind of look at... you know, Sean, just like, you know, he's fucking up. He's doing some some cardinal sins in here. He's fucking her cousin.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, but also like, yeah, it's fucking everyone's making some bad decisions, right? Yeah. Like,
but that's what death does, though.
Yeah.
And when you have the death of a child and people, you know, they want justice, and they're grasping onto anything. They're trying to figure out what happens. And like the first thing I said is like, you know, they start going after the midwife, and I'm just like, this is just something that happens.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was a great performance. Molly Parker played the midwife. I mean, during that 20-minute scene, that's felt like a single shot. There was no way it was.
It was a single shot.
Oh wow. Okay.
They did it 6 times, and the first day they did it 4. The first 2 days of shooting. First day they did it 4 times, and then they had to reset, and then the second day they did it twice, and they were just, because I was going to ask you guys, was it almost looked like there was a cut before her, like after her water broke, and I was like, did they cut there? But then after that, there was nothing. Like there was Justin mentioned the crowning part, and they had some crew members that were like hiding in a certain area so they could get the prosthetic of the baby. And then you had the parents of the actual baby waiting in another room. Like how they did that was like fantastic. Uh-huh. To me, like, and Vanessa Kirby said that was the best, the most fun she's ever had doing this, like losing a plant, pretending to lose a kid.
That's a bit dark. I mean, that scene, like, what made it so tense, and like I was like, I really want to look away, but clearly like this is a big part of the story, mm-hmm. was Molly Parker plays the midwife, like she's looking through the manual, she's like, she's clearly frazzled, and you're like, because she wasn't the one they were supposed to have, right?
Yeah. She wasn't the
and
one,
so it was just like all these unknown factors, and you just see Shia LaBeouf and Vanessa Kirby play the shit out of that scene, because he looks terrified, and he feels helpless.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, Vanessa Kirby, she's trying to deal with this and be strong. And I'm like, man, this is some fucking fantastic acting. This is a brutal story, but Jesus Christ.
You know, it's amazing.
And in childbirth, as a man, you are helpless. There's really nothing that you can do. Like it's on her, and you are 100% a support system. And it's just like, oh, you know, like all that plan shit, you know, it's the whole Mike Tyson thing. It's just like everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the face. And once that baby starts coming, you realize that, like, you are there just for support, and you're trying to just hold it together and just like it, and you're just trying to coach her up. Yeah. It's like, but at the same time, you also got to realize, and you got to be humble. The fact is like, yo, I'm not doing shit right now. Mm-hmm. I'm really not doing shit. I'm letting these doctors do everything that they have to do to make sure that, you know, my baby and my wife come out, you know, good out of this. And it's a really humbling experience. And like, you know, it's like, oh, it's beautiful, stuff like that. No, it's scary because you can't do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, go ahead, Joseph. I'm sorry.
No, it's just one of those things. It's just like, you know, after experience, and like, mind you, like I was, I don't know if you know the story, Chris, but you know, my baby came, you know, 6 months early.
Six weeks early.
Like he came 6 weeks early, and I was in New York and they were overseas. Well, actually, I was in Philly and they were overseas. I was on the road working, and then all of a sudden I get the call. It's just like, you know, my water broke. I'm like, wait, what? You know, so like I'm in my hotel room, And like, I'm on like WhatsApp, you know, FaceTiming, and I'm trying to do everything through the internet and things like that. So it's just like, and I'm sitting in my room alone and the cat's running around the room like a fucking wild animal. I'm just like I'm trying to fit, you know, it's this really scary thing. And it's like, for me, it's like, even I felt even more helpless, but I knew she had her mom there and her dad, you know, he was, you know, I think he left the room at this point, like, It's again, really humbling experience. And then it's like, it's all done. It's like, all right, they're taking her to surgery. Jackson's going to the surgery as well. And I'm just like sitting there. And I'm just sitting there like, okay. It's like, and like, all right, well, you know, get some sleep before you go to work. You know, are you going to go to work today? Everybody's like, you know, you don't worry about coming in. And it's like, I can't sit here anymore. I'm wired.
Yeah.
And I just went to work. I'm like, what else am I going to do? It's just like, because I if I knew if I sat there in it, it's just like I would have been driving myself crazy. Like, I gotta get out. I gotta do something.
Well, Sean does that, right? Like, he goes back to work, and like Vanessa Kirby, like, she tries, and then she's like, nope. Like, you know, and I got it. Like, I was just like, this is a lot. Well, and also, he can't. It was weird because Ellen Burstyn is shitting on Sean the whole time. And then they kind of have a common ground because they're like, who can we blame for this? The midwife, right? Like, we can't just say this is the way sometimes life is. We blame the midwife. Let's sue her. And then she ends up paying him off to leave.
Yeah. Well, you know, one the thing about this film, I don't think anybody's grief was in sync. And Justin, thank you so much for sharing what you shared, man. This is probably like the second time. Well, we'll talk about that off when we close off, but we're off mic. But thank you, brother, for sharing that. It almost seemed like nobody's grief was in sync.
No.
And like the three main characters, like Martha, Sean, and Elizabeth. One of the things that I liked about this movie, just the foundation within the first 7 minutes where how they establish everything. Mm-hmm. I love how they just establish work. And I love how work is established in films when they do it the right way. It's just like, okay, Sean is in construction. Really like that shot. That would look like that was one take. And you see him. Then you see Martha at the baby shower and at work. And she's, you just know it's somebody from the New Yorker did a review on this. And it was just like, oh, I wish we didn't know what Martha did. And I was like, it didn't really fucking matter. It's just like, you know, like it does the work. Cause I think a lot of times work, I mean, these people are, oh, I don't know where this director's from. Let me see. I don't think we live in a place in the America is just kind of, he's Hungarian.
Yeah.
And so it's like work defines us in America a lot. And we're just defined by that. And it doesn't matter what they do. You at least know explicitly that Sean is in construction. But so I like how they establish that. And you get to where they're getting that car and the mom's paying for it. Sean's like, I can pay for it. She's just trying to gain control. And this van is like gray, like her soul. And I just like how they established all of that. And then how, as soon as that baby's gone, as soon as you see that title card, Pieces of a Woman, 30 minutes into the film, everything else is in pieces. Everybody's relationship is in pieces, and they're trying to put stuff back together. And it's just kind of like, it is what it is. Like that, like when we talk about some of these filmmakers that are not full-blooded American in a lot of ways, how they just kind of show you shit and you just have to fucking deal with it, and we're not going to sugarcoat anything. I mean, that's kind of like just like, yeah. And then you don't get any understanding until maybe that fight. And what's that title card? That is, because I like how it's broken up too. It's starting out in October 9th and it ends on like April 3rd. But the part where February 5th is the season, like the second to last title card that you see, and it's the dinner at Elizabeth's house. That's where shit. Basically,
that's where she goes off. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything hits the fan, and then people are saying what they haven't said for a few months.
Yeah, she played that scene really well. That's the thing, like, that kind of sucks about all the stuff that came out about Shia with the FK Twigs, or I'm blanking on, like,
FKA Twigs. Yeah, you know, that's the thing, man. It's like, I've all, like, I got a lot of buddies that are like, oh, you know, because I root for these guys. I root for these actors because it's like the same way I root for athletes. Like, you're like, oh, I like this guy's talented. Mm-hmm. I like to see what this person does. And it's just like, oh, I'm not affected by that. But fuck him. You know, he did a bad thing. Fuck him. But then, you know, some people, it's easy to be dismissive. And, you know, I kind of root for these people. And it's just like, damn, that motherfucker's good. This is the best supporting actor nomination if he didn't fuck up. You know,
he's been stepping it up the past 2 years in the films that he's done. Honey Boy and then the Peanut Butter Falcon. Like,
yeah,
and it's like in. It really sucks because I've been a fan of Shia since Even Stevens, and obviously he's been very transparent about having a lot of demons. I think even after FK Twigs said this, he was like, I definitely did some really bad shit, and I'm so sorry. But it's like, I've seen the campaign from this movie go from like being like Shia, Vanessa Kirby, like, to the point where like I don't see it on any critic circles. Like, Vanessa Kirby's dropped significantly in like the list for best actress.
Really?
Like,
who's in that running? Because I look at Carrie Mulligan. Obviously, we talked about Frances McDormand earlier in the show.
Zendaya's taking her spot. And every critic I'm seeing, Zendaya from Malcolm and Marie is taking that spot.
You know,
wow, good for Zendaya. I love her.
Yeah, she's killing. I mean, she was great on Euphoria. So
listen,
dog, hold on. She was like, look, I'm fucking Spider-Man, the first Spider-Man. She was in it for like maybe 3 or 4 scenes. I was like, I love this girl. She's a star. She's a star.
Yeah.
So you telling me that's not a surprise, but okay, Justin, go ahead. I'm sorry, bro.
Yeah, no, it's like, you know, and good for Zendaya. And like, I'm glad that she's getting that. But at the same time, Shia LaBeouf doing whatever he did and, you know, whatever's going on with that dude shouldn't hurt the main actress's chances,
right?
It's shine. Mm-hmm. And like, that's the thing. It's just like, just because a person is in this work, that shouldn't then tank the entire thing. Because it's like, yo, there are other people that worked on there. There are a part, there are a piece, you know, of this thing that's, you know, that's a part of such a big whole. And to then just like bury somebody's film just because it's attached to this one person who did something shitty. You know, that's just so unfair. And I hate to see that, especially when you have, was it Vanessa Kirby, right?
Yeah.
Vanessa Kirby went and just like did great fucking work in this. And it's,
yeah,
like, it's because it also is because, like, as a performer, as we all know, it's so hard. It's so hard to get any notoriety for the work that you do, and then like an award or anything like that. That's even tougher. And she's finally at that place where she puts up a performance that's this good after, you know, obviously she's done other things.
And yeah, like, she's going to be okay. She was in Mission Impossible, Hobbs and Shaw, and she's a beautiful actress. Like, she'll be okay. But I think you're right. Like, this is tainting the work that she did do in this movie.
Yeah,
I don't think she would ever win, but definitely a nomination or recognition.
But all that helps, though.
Yeah,
all that helps. And it's just like, I just hate the fact is like, this is what we do. Cause even like with the Harvey Weinstein thing, it's just like, well, all Harvey Weinstein films, we're just going to X them. It's like, wait a second. Mm-hmm. He was the producer. Yeah. It's just like, you can just buy him out, cut him out of that thing. But so like, to then just take all of these people and just throw away their work like it's trash now. It's like, he's not even in the film. It's like, that's the kind of thing that like kind of breaks my heart for all of these performers that have to go through this shit. But at the same time, it's just like, hey, if you're out there and you're an actor, you're somebody, and it's like, yo, people count on you. Don't do fucked up things, which are then going to, you know, affect other people's lives. Cause you know, beyond you and the person that you did this to, it's affecting so many other people.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the biggest misstep he did besides the tax collector was the shit with FK Twigs. So.
It's like a plague on everybody's houses when you fuck up like that. I was a big fan of Shia, and to be honest with you, that motherfucker, he'll be back.
Yeah, I mean, you're right.
No, well, I mean, I heard he was having conversations with Marvel before all this shit popped off. So, I mean, he's going to be hurting for a little bit.
Oh, he'll be hurting, but he'll be back. I mean, you know, I know he got kicked out of that Olivia Wilde movie. He got fired.
Yeah, apparently he was crazy.
Honestly, I think he'll be back after a while. What did
look at Rob Lowe. Like, he's back.
Oh, you mean Rob Lowe?
Yeah, Rob.
Yeah. Rob Lowe and fucking.
What did he do again in the 80s?
And Iron Man.
Robert Downey Jr. That was all because of drugs and things like that. Rob Lowe had sex with like a 16-year-old girl on tape.
Oh, I didn't think it was that.
Shit, yeah. Man.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right. Well. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know,
that's a showstopper.
We talked about Carey Mulligan's age in this one. What did you think about Ellen Burstyn? She's like 88 in the movie.
She killed it.
She was fucking fantastic.
She killed it. Because yeah. she was like fucking vicious mother-in-law. Yeah, she was such a bitch.
But was it like
Sean? And, you know, I love, like you said, Chris, I love the beginning scenes that establish the relationships between these characters, because you saw like the tension between Sean and her. And then she didn't really let up, even when they were partnering with each other to go mm-hmm. against the midwife, because the mom was using that to divide them further.
Yep.
Yeah. She's the one telling Vanessa Kirby that, oh, Sean agrees with me, blah, 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 knowing what that's going to do to their relationship. Mm-hmm. And then that's why she's like, here's money. Just go.
Get.
Were you guys bothered by the age at all? Because she's in her 80s and she's playing the mother of like a 30 year olds.
No,
it didn't really bother me either. That was just another.
My dad was in his 80s.
Yeah.
My dad's diving 77, but if he was still alive, he'd be 82.
Okay. Yeah. See, my dad will be 80, knock on wood, in April. But it's like, because I just read something where they were talking about that. I was like, oh, well, maybe she just had him late. Which would she have had him when she was like in her 50s? But I didn't think about that. I was not thinking about that the first time I saw it. So that's like, you know, suspension of disbelief and, you know, like Carey Mulligan being 35, 34, probably at the time.
Well, but at the same time, though, she doesn't necessarily have to be in her 80s in this film.
Because, that's true.
Because, yeah. you know, white people. I mean, actually, no, just all people age differently, you know, before.
Yeah.
So she could just not look very well because she lived a hard life. I mean, you know, the shit that she was talking about is like, oh, she should look like she's 137 years old, you know, with talk about her mom and how she hit her floorboard. Yeah. I'm like, what?
Yeah. That would be like 40s, in the 40s or something like that. So that it could work. It could actually work if she's talking about that. I just, because it was some, if the performances are good enough, people aren't going to think about that shit. Because even you guys being critics and me being an actor and stuff, it's like, I'm not thinking about that. That's just a great performance. Mm-hmm. You know, and like in with the Carey Mulligan thing, it's just like in the world of that film, it works. You know, it just fucking works. But especially after I saw it to die for. But so that didn't bother you guys. What? Let me see if it was something else I wanted to ask about this. What else did you like about this movie? And then I just want to talk a little bit about symbolism with the apples and the sprouting and stuff. How did you think that played into it?
I can't speak too much about the symbolism just because I didn't think about it that deeply, if I'm being completely honest. But I love the cinematography of this movie. I think it's shot really well. I think the performances, even with the supporting, similar to Pieces of a Woman, I think everyone did what they, you know, what the script called for them to do. Even Eliza Schlesinger, who had like the small role. I think everyone did pretty well. The only thing that kind of was like, did you really need to do that? Was the whole affair with the lawyer cousin?
That was kind of weird.
I was like, I would have rather seen like hook up with some random chick than like to do
so.
That.
I don't think so. I think that's kind of par to the course. Cause like I've seen people in that place of grieving and things like that. And because
Because she's rejecting him, like when he's trying to like have sex for the first time.
Their communication is so off.
Yeah.
He's just like anybody. He's another anybody. Mm. And the lawyer, she's helping him out with, with this case.
Midwife thing.
And I think that's an easy place for him to just jump, because like he's looking for anything to make himself feel good about himself. Mm. That's why he doesn't want to have sex, because he out of love and shit like that. He wants to have a sex to make himself feel good, feel whole, try again, and try to gain some normalcy into his life. So I think that's actually spot on. I think that's really spot on. Cause once she says, we're like family. And I was just watching, I'm just like, there's something going to happen here. it seemed weird. And once he met her, he walked into that room. I'm just like, it's like, oh, I found the earring there. I'm like, he's fucking
my
cousin. Yeah, like immediately. Yeah. It just went right there. Like, it's just the way that people handle their emotions. And I think that's the thing about this film, is like, it's about raw emotion. And those emotions, like, you know, sometimes you can map out, you can write a romance, like, oh, he's going to go here and here and there. And other times it's like, it just goes other places. Like, you don't even realize until you're fucking, 5 miles down the road. Yeah. Just like, fuck, what did I do?
Yeah.
Like, when he gets out of that car, go to the airport and fly back. And I was, he just threw his hat in and left. And I was like, damn, dude. Like,
you think so what did you think about that, Justin? Did you think he just kind of gave up too quick, or he was just like, it's over anyway?
I think there was no turning back at that point.
I think he was fully resigned once he took the money from the mom. Yeah. I think he was like, I'm just have to cut these people out of my life. Like, I just got to move on. Mm-hmm. I think they both needed that. Like, at the end of the day, I think both of them in that relationship just needed to have a hard stop and cut off. He just happened to get some money out of it. Because there was no like coming back from that, because of like how deteriorated their communication channels have become. So
yeah, then he's sleeping with her cousin, and that whole thing is just like, he needed to go. He needed to remove himself from the situation. And like, I think that was a smart move. Is it shitty the way he went about it? Yes, but it's just like, again, that wound is still open because they never took the time to really heal from it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I just wonder how long do you think they were together before it all?
I think a few years, right?
Yeah, I know Sean was sober for like 6 years,
7 years, and that's the other thing though. You have his sobriety plays a factor into this. It's like now he started drinking again, and he's crushing up pills and snorting them and things like that. So like, All of this pain that he was going through, he needed to get the fuck out of Dodge.
Yeah.
So for him,
he needed a hard reset.
Yeah, he needed that hard reset. Go back to fucking Seattle.
Yeah.
And get his life together, because there it was like they were swimming in pain and agony, and it wasn't going to get any better until they've actually kind of dealt with it head on. And like, obviously that family wasn't doing it. Mm-hmm. He couldn't do it alone with Martha. So it was just like, yo, he's do his own thing. Go.
Yep.
Fuck out of there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Like, I thought like the first time I watched it, I was like, God damn, he just fucking up and left. But then when I watched it again last night, I was just like, I get it. She's like, I never liked you. And he's like,
to be fair to him too, Martha didn't really fight for him to stay.
No, she didn't.
What we saw. So it's like, why would I still try to fight for this? Sometimes relationships just end and people, fall apart.
Yeah.
Or, become further apart and stuff. And it just happened with this tragedy. And, I think that's, I appreciate the authenticity of like how that wrapped up.
I like that he threw the hat in the car, though. He's like, remember me.
That was probably a Shia improv.
He's a fucking
beast. The fact that he opened the door back up to do it.
He's a fucking beast. That's a great moment, dog. Like, it was just like, this is fucked up, but remember this hat. And you see at the end, she's, throwing the ashes out, she's wearing that hat.
Yep.
You know, that was a and like you were saying earlier, Justin, it is not that it's natural for relationships to sever or to end when you have a loss like that. And there's even in like I working in special with special needs children from the perspective that I was working and I was a teacher's assistant. There were single parents. There were like single moms. When people look at that as a failure, if your kid has any type of disability or down, some do, not all, but there were. I remember a kid. There was a kid with Down syndrome, and it was just him and his mother. And you know, it's not a surprise. It was just like, again, this movie's like very unflinching. It's like these are two movies that we don't that are like fuck your feelings.
for real.
You're just gonna
feel them.
yeah. You're gonna feel whatever you feel, and you're gonna have to deal with it. But I did I think that the more that I think about it, that moment where he throws the hat back into the truck, it was like, okay, I felt that. That was a great moment.
Well, because I also think that there's more to that. It's like, it's not even just anger, it's disappointment. There's so much being said in just that throwing of the hat in there. It's a real, and the fact that she said nothing about it, you know, and it's just like, you know, that's it.
He tried more than she did, though.
I think, you know, you have to be fair to the fact is, for one, her body was going through
the trauma.
You know, the trauma. So she's far more connected to the death.
The loss, exactly, than
he is. But
that was one of the things in their fight that he talked about. Yeah.
I think part of it is that she obviously did not take this the right way, and she wasn't able to communicate. But instead of acting out in the way that he did, he needed to actually lean more into her and try to ground her as much as he possibly could, go to therapy and all that stuff, because that's the only way you get through this kind of stuff, especially in the zone where she was. And like, but because he had his own stuff going on, he had the mom in his ear. He had this and this and that, and you know, she's making these decisions that obviously hurt him, and she wasn't being forthright and communicating with all this stuff, you know. And I guess also the fact that they weren't married, so most of the parental rights and everything
to her, like that, so she was able to like cremate the body.
Yeah, make all the decisions. He felt like he was on the outside looking in. So it's like then that's where all the anger and resentment start to boil.
Yeah.
So it's like she wasn't necessarily wrong. They were in a place where they were set up to fail.
And she also did things based on the examples you gave, like that kind of in a way emasculated him, or at least made Sean feel like he was less than a man, right?
Well, the mother was doing that especially. That
yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, like, I get why she acted the way that she did. But, like, you know, even beyond all of that, as, you know, the man in this situation, you know, he has to try to look past all that. But he's also trying to look past that while also grieving the death of his first child.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's like, it's such a hard fucking place. It's such a hard fucking place to be in. And it's just like, this movie is basically about, you know, if you're watching this as a man, it's just like, how do you support your partner? You have support through childbirth. You lose the child. You also have support her while also trying to support yourself and, you know, support just the world around you. Yeah. But it's like, you kind of, you know, in a way he almost kind of has to put his feelings on the back burner to get her right. So then they could both get right.
Yeah.
And like, but he needed outside help, but the help that he was getting from her mom, that wasn't helping.
Yeah, that wasn't. No.
And then the pussy he started getting from her cousin, that definitely wasn't.
Nope.
So like, you know, there's just a lot of things that float in there, and I think it was very masterfully done.
Yeah, you know, Justin, I think it's a very astute point that you made that I didn't even think about, and there's a scene to support what you said about her body still recovering from the loss, where she goes back to work and she's in that the shopping center and she starts lactating. Mm-hmm. And she's looking at that kid and the kid's staring back at her and she doesn't realize that she's lactating. And she's like, oh, man. And yeah, like that scene. And then the other scene where he's
she was wearing like the diaper when she went to the bathroom.
Yeah. And like where Sean is comes in and says, why are you trying to, what do you say? He's like, you're trying to do, why are you trying to erase my kid? You know, he said my kid instead of ours, you know. Yeah. It's a great fucking movie.
There's layers. It's a fucking onion. It's a blooming onion, y'all.
So the sprouting, the apple shit didn't do anything to you. We got it, Brand. I was just gonna let it lay.
she smelled.
Oh my god.
The baby smelled like apples.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, then, you know, she had the apples. So I guess like that's, you know how, like, I think they say that like smells are like, the sense of smell is like, is one of like the strongest recovery, sense for memory. Mm-hmm. And things like that. So that's when she grows the apple tree.
Yeah,
her daughter's playing mm-hmm. at the end, right? So like that's a way for her to be reborn, you know, through, you know, the apple tree and all of that. And that's I think the apple is basically is like, you know, she's starting to grow, like the memory of her daughter is starting to become from just like this black little seed, and is starting to sprout into something else, because I think that's a sign of her healing. And starting to grow her life back.
Yeah, I love how they set that up, because at first that argument, I guess they try to have before they try to have sex. I think when they go back into the I don't know. It's when Sean is like he goes in to take his first the first time we see him start to relapse, getting back into the alcohol, putting mm-hmm. it into his canteen, and then he sneaks a drink and he looks at her and says, you're not going to eat that apple. And then she comes in the kitchen and she starts like hiding it, like she's hiding the apple. And that's the first time you notice it. And she's on the bus with that father and his kid. And then she's eating the apple and you see that seed. And I think you see that she looks at that seed for the first time. And then she sees that kid having a moment with his or her dad. I can't tell if that was a boy or a girl. Yeah. It was a little girl. And so they're like, I was like, okay. And then you start to see, and then like that second to last title card, that piece of her that you see is when she says the baby smelled like an apple. She gets that film developed, and then the sprouts, the next time the sprouts are growing. And, you know, so that's like, that was the thing. I watched heavy spoilers after I watched it for the first time. And then that dude was like, oh, the apples are this and blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, shit. OK. But well, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, I appreciate that. But that's also like I feel like that's why Justin and I are kind of like on the fringes of the film critic world, because we're not that like we appreciate like deeper meaning and stuff. But I feel like that stuff is very pretentious, and having met a lot of these film critics, I'm like, I don't want to. I wouldn't want to.
Well, Justin gave a really great theory that worked for me. Like I wondered.
You're a great interviewer, Chris. You got a different brand than Justin on this episode.
Well,
you talk about dicks and all kinds of crazy shit.
I'm really good at this, and you guys are good at what you do. So that's why it works. Should more people be listening to us? Of course they fucking should.
Yeah.
But I just noticed it, you know, like sometimes you just go for reference points. Cause I always go for the most part when it's something I just thought like, okay, she's growing and she was the years have passed and she obviously that's her little kid. And so she's, I don't think she'll ever get over the loss of that kid, but she's moving on and she's trying to have a better life. And then when I saw, I was like, oh shit, the apples. But then it made me go back and think about it. But you don't have to get the sprouting to understand what's going on in this film, because it's really just it's pretty much straightforward. I did like the fact that I don't necessarily think that it was a subplot, but with the midwife going to trial, I like that moment too. I like those moments there.
Yeah, that was good. And I love Martha, like that whole testimony scene. Like, I think Vanessa Kirby, like, because she's like reliving that trauma through these questions, and she's looking at the midwife who knows that she probably didn't do everything right, but that she didn't maliciously fuck it up.
And you're 100% correct. And I think that Martha, she never had a voice. She didn't have her voice throughout the entire movie. Like, she was making all these decisions, but she wasn't making her decisions with her, you know, with her head. She was just going through the motions of everything, and she forgot who she was as a person. So when she finally, you know, saw those pictures, and then she's just like, I got an opportunity to hold my baby. You know what I'm saying? I got, you know, if it wasn't for this woman, I may have never have gotten even those fleeting moments that she had where she was alive. She wouldn't have had that in the first place. So with that, I think that kind of took away a lot of the bullshit that she was feeling and opened her up to be like, no, she at least gave me that. And she has to be thankful for her. The thing that I would have hoped was if she would have embraced her, she would have went over and embraced her, hugged her or anything, because like, that woman is also grieving as well, because nobody wants to see a kid. Yeah. Nobody wants to see that shit. I'm like, you have to be a special kind of monster in the depths of hell to be like dead babies. Yes. Like, that's some crazy shit. So I think it's like, you know, and then for all for the last few months to be going through all that, people calling you a monster and you did this, do that. It's like, that's a fucking hard place to be in. That scene, I was like, oh fuck. Like, I'm just so glad that she finally got there. Her mother's noises out of her head. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was good that Shia LaBeouf is gone by this point. That shit's out of her head. And she finally gets a little bit of clarity. Yeah. But unfortunately for her, it came so late, because if she would have saw those pictures a long time ago, I'm pretty sure it would have fucking got her mind right. But she needed those. Mm-hmm. But she just wasn't in the
place. Well, she needed the distractions out of her life too. She needed... She had the hard reset too. So that allowed her to.
No, but I think that she needed to see those pictures. She needed to see her baby alive for those moments to help her just kind of realize that, like, yes, she's gone. But like, if she was going to be gone, she was gonna go, like, that's just fate. That's just destiny. That was going to happen. And there's nothing that can change that. But like, you know, it's a blessing that she even had those moments to look into her baby's eyes before she died. She got to hear that cry and stuff like that. And that's like that, like, as a parent, that's all you fucking hope for. It's like, it's all these little tiny micro moments have been built up into all this other shit. And it's like, I think it was a fucking masterclass in how they did this one. You guys already know what the fuck I'm going to rate it.
Okay. Well, why don't we just start there? Why don't we just start with your rating, Justin, of this?
XL. I mean, it's I again, this hit me. This one hit me hard. I mean, I'm glad my wife was watching it with me. But I was sitting there and like, again, it got me fucking tearing up and crying and shit like that a few times. And like at the point, obviously, like I spoke about earlier, when the baby was actually cried for the first time. But just like the emotion that I was feeling, because like, you know, like obviously I haven't felt it on that level, but you know, but there are scary portions throughout a pregnancy. Like, you know, again, like Chris, I don't know, like Jackson, he was born with an abnormality, and like, we were afraid that we could have lost him. So it's like all of this shit. So like, I understand where Shia LaBeouf's character, where he had to, what he had to do to try to get her mind right and things like that. And how he was falling short. Like, I've navigated some of those waters. So I'm just like,
on top of trying to stay sober.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's like, so many layers.
Yeah. And you know, but you know, for me, it's like, I had to navigate those waters on top of, you know, still being pregnant and trying to keep her, you know, in a try to keep her as positive as possible, because the stress can then lead to worse, you know, outcomes for, you know, for an unborn child, and then dealing with my own fucking stress and dealing with work and, you know, everything else. So it's like, there's like, you know, you become just 100% a support system. And it's like, the way they did this, it's like, I felt this so fucking hard, because like that's what it's like. That's exactly what it's like. And it's one false move, you know, and you know, you could go down, you know, the road that they went down.
Wow. Well, I'm giving it a large. I think the performance is phenomenal.
What the fuck, Brandon?
I do think that they could have cut the 7 minutes to make it a tie at 2 hours. I do think there is some
what
stuff.
What would you cut?
I think I would have cut
her making out with the kid from The Last Black Man in San Francisco.
I mean, I could have done without that. I could have done. I could have cut the lawyer and Shiloh scenes a little bit, just like, you know, like just cut a little bit of fat from those scenes.
Him talking about resonance.
Yeah, I just think there were some opportunities to cut like a little bit to make it a really tight 2 hours. I mean, but that's also me, because this is an incredibly uncomfortable film to watch.
Yeah,
so you're just like, when is this over? When is this over? And so, the performances are phenomenal. I think this is some of the best work I've seen all these actors and actresses do. Specifically, Kirby, LaBeouf, and Burstyn. I think they all three did a phenomenal job. I think the direction was really well done. I think the actors knew exactly what points they had to hit to make the performances work. And I mean, it's true that the creative team used this as a way of therapy to talk about their traumatic situation. I think it's an incredibly powerful way to do that.
Yeah. I give this one an extra large XL because it's I think it's a technical masterpiece, for one, how they pull off that
single shots.
Yeah, and all these single shots, even this what looked to be a single shot of Shia LaBeouf at work in the opening scene. I loved how you definitely get to see these pieces of a woman and the 7 months, 6 to 7 months after she loses this kid, and how she tries to piece her life back together. And it's just Vanessa Kirby. I'll say it, and people will make fun of me, but that is she is a revelation in this one, because I had not seen whatchamacallit,
Crown.
The Crown. I hadn't seen her in that. And she's incredible. I'll watch anything she's in now. I don't like period pieces. She's in this movie where she's, I guess, kind of a lesbian. She's a lesbian or something. And with what the hell is this movie? It's on my watch. Are you guys on Letterboxd at all?
No.
It's a way. Jeff Cerulli introduced this to me, and it's a way for me to keep up with these movies. The World to Come, with her and Catherine Waterston.
Okay.
And it's like some two women who forge a close connection despite their isolation in mid 19th century American frontier.
Listen,
I like the way you read that.
I remember I saw her in the most recent Mission Impossible movie, and I remember Googling her right, like when I was leaving the theater. I'm like, who was that hot blonde chick?
She's bad.
With Tom Cruise for some reason.
Yeah, of course she's in the movie with Tom. I don't remember her in that. I remember her more in that Sean Hobbs or whatever. Hobbs
and Shaw. Yeah, I think she was the White Rose or some shit in the Mission Impossible movie. Yeah,
I'll watch her in any fucking thing now. But like, yeah, she's great. I think I know, you know, with these two films, I think you know, you got Kirby and Mulligan. Before, I thought it was just like, you know, I thought it was Diane Lane in Let Him Go, which after seeing these, I thought it was a terrific performance, but I just think technically these actors had to do a lot more. Mm-hmm. And the emotional range that they had to deal with, you know, I don't know where they're going to put Viola Davis, but I'm just kind of putting her in that, my girl Nomadland, what's her name,
Frances McDormand.
I just kind of put her in the same box for now, because they already won, and you kind of want to see what's going to happen with these. But yeah, I really love this movie. It's not an easy watch at all, but just from an actor's standpoint, story, just every way that this movie works on so many levels. It's great. Well, guys, plug your show and plug anything else that you want to plug. This has been a really great time. I was super excited to have you guys back
on. Thanks for having us on, man.
Yeah, we got to do this again. We got to do this kind of in the
near whenever future. You do like your movie critics, you do little movie conversations and you have Jeff or JL or Rod. I'm like, Chris, we have a group text together. Wait, what's going on? That's
fired. Oh, shit.
Damn, Brandon.
I was like, we over here like doing the work. Come on, man.
Well, the reason that we did JL and Rod, we did Fatal because Rod had coined that black executive fan fiction and we had done The Intruder before. So since Fatal is coming out, and this year's been so weird that, you know, normally, you know, I would do one with Jeff Cerulean and I would do an indie. We talk about indie movies and stuff, but we'll just have to make more room for it because now that I've got Zoom, we can, you know, make it a little more expansive, or, you know, I can just talk to you guys because I can do this till I'm blue in the face, but it's just I don't want to bug other, you know, I just don't want to bug y'all, you know, I don't like bugging people to do shit, but this is you know, I always love talking about it, so. I think I'll just be more proactive with reaching out.
All right. Sounds good, man. Tell people about the Medium Popcorn Show, baby.
Brandon, if you keep on calling me baby, you keep this up. It's been a running thing, Chris, and I'm going to assault Brandon one of these days. But we're Medium Popcorn. We have a weekly podcast. You know, we drop them every Wednesday. If you're interested in checking us out, you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, basically any Amazon podcast music app, you know, wherever you listen to your podcast. Follow us at Medium P Podcast, Twitter and Instagram. We also have a webpage, mediumpopcorn.com. Brandon, boom. Where can they follow you, my friend?
Hey, everybody. Y'all can follow me at American Collins, americancollins.com. If you like what Justin and I are doing and you like the insanity of the comments I make, also check out my Drunk Black History Show. That's on Friday, February 26th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can find the link at americancollins.com.
And just for me, you guys could follow me at Jay Brown Did It on Twitter and Instagram. And Chris, right back at you, to your host.
And I will say that, you know, I would say with last year, comedy wise, I mean, I went to the live tape and I had a great time on just being an audience member on Drunk Black History. And through the pandemic, that was the only doing Drunk Black History on Juneteenth. That was the only comedy related thing. Yeah. Event that I was really a part of, took part in, and I really enjoyed it. That was fucking great, man. So, you know, everybody,
hey, great, man. I'm glad you were able to do it.
Yeah. So that's it, guys. Thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you next time. Take it easy, everybody.